Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
The Edits series by Korn Publishers is comprised of the concise guides to the full gamut of Jewish thought, from the Torah to modern halakha, or Jewish law, and mashava, Jewish philosophy. The late Rabbi Adin Evan Israel Steinsaltz was one of the leading thinkers of the modern age and the most prolific author of Jewish thought and commentary since the Middle Ages. Tune in as we speak with Rabbi Evan Israel's son, Rabbi Meni Evan Israel, about his father's life and work and about the concise guides. Rabbi Meni is the executive director of the Steinsaltz Center. You're listening to New Books in Jewish Studies, a channel of the New Books Network, and I'm Michael Morales, your host. Rabbi Meni, welcome to New Books in Jewish Studies.
Thank you.
So tell us about your father, Rabbi Adin Evan Israel Steinsaltz. Tell us something about his life and work as a rabbi and a father.
Sure. So my father was born in Israel in 1937. It was not Israel yet. It was still in the English Mandate. I grew up in a house that was very unique. We grew up in a very extremely secular environment. He, in all accounts, was a brilliant student. I will say even a genius. As my grandfather used to say, a brain like that arrived once every 200 years. Why me? He definitely was something of a unique person. You start finding guy in a very young age. Again, we don't know if it's 11 or 13 or 15. He never talked about it, so it's all what we gathered through the years. He finally made a decision. He became religious and actively religious. Again, brilliant mind. I mean, the man used to concentrate for hours on end on particular spiritual or intellectual concept that it's tremendous. I mean, he wrote to my mother that she should not be afraid if she see him standing in a point for 5-6 hours at a time contemplating idea. Now, I never saw him. I never saw 5-6 hours. I saw him many times doing things, for long, concentrating a very long period of time. It was very impressive. In his early 20s, he became the youngest principal in Israel. And immediately after that, he decided, I think, after a couple of years, that teaching was not really his direct repertoire dealing with a classroom setting. He taught many, many, many hours of informal education, sometimes informal, but not as a principal, so to speak. And he started working on his monumental translation of the Talmud, Aramaic Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, to Hebrew. And the idea was always very simple. The idea was that the Talmud is it's a large, massive work. It's probably one of the largest historical books that we have in existence today. I mean, if we know that the ancient mystical library of Alexandria was burned and the great library of Athens was burned, the library of the Jews, the library of the Jewish people, which was encompassed in that Talmud, survived, mainly because everybody learned it. Talking about a work of almost 5,500 pages, long and complex, not even easy, that one have to really contemplate what it means, divide on a variety of topics from legends to law to commandments to any topic in life you have. I mean, some of the stuff dealing with morality, some dealing with sexuality, dealing with intellect, some learning, charity, you name it. The problem is that the book, being written about 1,500 years ago, is written in archaic Aramaic, which we can find a similar concept in the book of Daniel in the Bible, and some references in the book of Ezra, but not more than that. It really doesn't exist. This is a full language, full conversation, and clearly the need was to translate it to the people. So he specifically used modern Hebrew to translate it. So that was his main work. In between, he created all kind of schools. He was the first, later, about in the 80s, he was the first official institution in Russia, recognized by the Russian government as the first religious institution that was really recognized by the state of the, you know, the former Soviet Union as the first really revival of Jewish people. There were underground organizations all the time, all the 70 years of the Russian government, but definitely, he was the first one. Russia, of course, developed in the Jewish community there is tremendous. So that was his main work. Took 45 years to accomplish. We finished it officially. The translation of the Hebrew edition was 2010. And then I arrived to his office as his executive director. And I told him, so I'm going to retire now. Sit on your chair and then smoke your, you know, long pipe. Can imagine the big, you know, and the rocking chair on the porch, you smoking. I said, right, sure. So he said, come, bring me some project and we will consider them together. So I said, you know, out of my mind, we have a commentary on the Mishnah, which is earlier than Talmud, a commentary on the Bible. We can do the Talmud in English, and we can do also commentary on the Maimonides Book of Law. And I thought, you know, normal people, right? You had a life project like the Talmud. You take one project and that become your secondary legend or secondary life achievement. So he said, okay, we'll do them all. He started with a commentary on the Bible that eventually was translated, of course, to English too. But it was done every day. He used to speak 1 hour teaching 1 or 2 chapters of Bible. The beginning was also English and Hebrew, but then only in Hebrew. And he went through the entire Bible in less than 3 years. And from there, we took team and we edited and we created the Steinfeld Bible, available in your local Amazon store. Later on, him and his team of students accomplished a commentary on Maimonides' Book of Law. It's a 14-volume work. His last and final major project was his commentary on the Mishnah, which is written around 2nd century in Hebrew and translated again, commentating in Hebrew. He won a tremendous amount of prizes, including the last recognition he got was actually from the U.S. Congress. The U.S. Congress, upon accepting his books or receiving his books in the Library of Congress, had a proclamation in the Library of Congress and in the Congress about his work, which was a tremendous literary value to the entire world. So that's him in a nutshell. As a son, you know, of course, it was a challenge. It's normal. I mean, there's nothing you can do. Famous fathers. As I like to say, my psychologist already bought a third house in Monaco and says dedicated by many. It's fine. You know, it's part of the challenge.
I read somewhere that your father was compared to Rashi, called the Rashi of our generation. That is a huge compliment.
Yeah, look, and in a lot of ways, it's true. I mean, the basic concept of Rashi was to bring the text, was complex then, this is almost 1,000 years ago, to the masses, or to the masses who can read. We know that the Jewish community, even in Europe, retained the ability of reading most likely more than any other nation, so to speak. So, yeah, so definitely did this. And again, he wrote not just on the biblical, typical, what we call the Jewish canon, which consists of really 4 books, small book, the Bible, the Mishnah, the Talmud, and the Law. He also wrote a vast commentary on a mystical book called the Tanya, which is the the foremost book of the Lubavitch Hasidim, you know, the guy with the menorah you see everywhere in the United States. That was the big, you know, he wrote a major commentary on that too, which another volume of that particular translation and commentary on the Tanya is being produced as we speak, to be published in the United States in the next few months. So, yeah, he definitely, I think there's a merit to it. There's a merit to that statement.
And it's not just his ability to write a lot, but his gift of being able to reduce the wisdom of ages and to present it in a way that common people can understand.
Right. And I remember asking him when I started working for him. Actually, he came to me and asked me to work for him, which I was very happy because, it was not something I was thinking about personally, but he asked me to come and work for him. And, you know, I come back to Israel. I was in the States. I was in the University of Maryland. I was in other places. And I arrived back to Israel, and I tried to figure out what is the big deal. You know, I have to work with the organization. Yes, it's my father, but, you know, I have to work with the organization to find the right wording, how to define what we call the elevator speech, right? How you define what we do. So basically, he told me that there are three principles. Two of them are synonymous, just two sides of the same coin. And the third is a bit unique. So the first thing is that our position is that let my people know. And by people, he meant everybody that he can reach and teach. They are his people, and they have to know. Faith is a tremendous thing, but knowledge is bigger. Knowledge is better. Because once I know something, once I understand something, my faith in it or my devotion to it or my commitment to it become exponentially larger and bigger, and I relate to people better because I understand. I can talk about it from different perspectives. So that's the positive. The negative is that I really hope that none of my family will be ignoramus. I don't mind if they become heretics, but ignoramus is unacceptable. You have to know. So that's basically the same coin, just two sides of it. And then I asked him, okay, that's very nice. So what is the big deal about your commentary? What is the importance of it? And he said, you didn't understand that the importance of it is what I did and the way you describe it. Let's take the Bible because it's easier thing to convey. I took the Bible that has thousands of commentators. Even if you read the Bible in the King James Version, the translator, based on all the translators, choose certain word that they use to describe a certain paragraph or even a certain word, and you have to bring them all together. Said my goal is to take all those plethora of commentators. The man also had very close to photographic memory, so it was easier for him. And to bring a one line that basically compile and compelled all of those people to work together. So he can bring a commentary that in verse number 2, 3, 4, and 7 will be Rashi, and 6, 8, and 14 will be Ibn Ezra, and then it'll be a modern commentator, and he will use modern understanding of what certain things are. So that was the unique thing, is this very, very clear line that in a way might be simplistic, but not simple. It's very simplistic because it's very clear. It's very obviously that he's trying to get rid of all the noise outside and make sure you have the right line. Now, obviously, there's never ending for that. You can always find somebody else. You always find somebody, another commenter. There's always more information. Always. But that's what it is. I mean, the human ability to write and to talk and to explain and to whatever whatever you want to call it is unlimited. It's infinite. When I learned, I'm teaching now several times in during the week, and every time you teach somebody, it depends on the background, nationality, the language you speak, the ability of comprehending a text, even if you read text it was traditionally is very clear, it's a hard work. People have a different way to reading it. And that's the reason his biggest challenge was to find the right way to make one line be accessible, available, and people can relate to.
As you mentioned a moment ago, "Let my people know" is the slogan or motto for the Steinsaltz Center. Tell us more about the overall work of the Steinsaltz Center.
Sure. Steinsaltz Center is our basically our doing business as. We have a few nonprofits and few profits, for-profit organizations, and they have to come up in one organization because otherwise, as you can imagine, it's never ending. So we have one name. That is the Steinsaltz Center. We're located in Jerusalem, about a block away from the prime minister and two blocks away from my house, but I'm not talking about that, and about 25 minutes from the old city. It's just, you know, it's an office suite. Basically, what we do from here, we do two major things. One is we continue our my father legacy. We underestimated really the amount of material my father left. You know, we estimate, and this is just the beginning stage of this estimate, we're about 80 books yet to come.
Wow.
And this is not including anthologies and secondary commentary on things he already wrote, but just literally 80, maybe more books we can compile together from his writing, from his work, that we can, that people can really benefit from it in any way, shape, or form. And that's the main job of what we do. So that's one thing. To map everything we have, to start producing it, start bringing it out to the people. The second part we do, we work very hard on, is our app. We are working now tremendously in the last couple of years to bring all my father's works to an online digital platform. It'll be available, accessible to everybody again worldwide. We will, of course, we'll have to have it custom made. So if you want a white label for your university or for your synagogue, for your church, if you have all the materials you need, we can provide only what you need. If you teach only the 20 chapters of Numbers, so to speak, so you have an app that will only concentrate on those 20 chapters. And you can go back and forth. You can learn them, you can read them, and so on and so forth. So that is the two major things we do. Under that, we have a whole plethora of things from educational systems to curriculum building to interfaith dialogue, you name it. We do it all, but we try to keep it in a very clear path. What we do is not in a sense religious work. Our main interest in the goal that my father, may rest in peace, defined is knowledge. What you do with it, how you take it and how you move it forward, that's all up to you. We're not stopping you, God forbid. You know, whatever you want with it, but really we give you the keys. And what kind of keys or the spoon, whatever, it depends on the allegory that you like. And whatever you like, we will provide it. We'll give you the information and do whatever you want. Our biggest deal is, in a sense, is that we try constantly to basically give you the tools. We're not trying to solve all your problems. We're not trying to give you all the answers. We actually want you to do the work by yourself, to feel comfortable with the text and to become your text, not only mine. Become something that you can learn from it. So in a sense, I'm giving you the spoon and the bowl of soup. I'm not willing to do this action for you. The action of eating the soup, that's up to you. You know, the famous line, if we can bring Muhammad to the mountain, but we can't make him, you know, and can bring the horse to the water, but I can't even bring the water to the horse. But if he's not going to put his head down and drink, I can't do anything about it. So our goal is to provide the best material. And that, by the way, that's the reason we, for example, choose a publisher, Koren Publishing, is because the way they produce material, the way it's looked, the visuality, the comfortability, the ability of them to expand and to reach everybody, it's outstanding. And therefore, we know we're very happy that we choose them specifically in order to provide a more of a pleasant experience for it.
Koren does indeed do a terrific job with their publications. We're looking at the Eretz Concise series today, published under Koren's Magid label, along with the Steinsaltz Center. These are beautifully published hardbacks, color-coded by volume, really pleasing for those who love books. Now, there are four volumes in this Steinsaltz series: The Concise Guide to Torah, to the Sages, to Mashava, and to Halakha. Tell us about this collection.
So the goal is, we, you know, if you look around in your library, you look in my library, there's too many books. There are too many books to learn. Even if I won't learn the entire Talmud, again, you can do it about 7 years. Or if you learn the entire corpus of Jewish law, 3 years. If you learn, want to contemplate Jewish, it's never ending. There's too much information. One of the things we try to do over here, again, is the same notion. We're trying to bring people the first spoon. I'm afraid if I'm giving you a spoon, it's too big, or the soup is too large, or too hot, you're not going to take the step forward. So we took, actually, my father is the one who chose what would be in. What was the right thing to put as the premises of what a person needs to learn? Obviously, it's not everything. Obviously, there can be hundreds of a different variation of this. But this is what he chose to do. So we choose this for, first of all, in the Torah. Torah is, in our way, in our perception, Torah is when God speaks to man. Right? That is the first notion. God speaks to man. And the way we choose the translation, the commentary we used here, obviously based on what he did and wrote, but it's not elaborate. It's very light. The reading, it's very fluid. That's the main purpose of it. You can read it. If you want to go sleep with it, I know it's a bit thick. I'm afraid you're not going to fall on you when you sleep, but it's very comfortable read. And that was the goal here. The goal is to make people acquainted with the text. Something that we can say, not, that's interesting. I never read it this way. That we, the commentator is almost not felt. That is, the commentary is almost clear. It's almost a sing-through commentary. Light, comfortable. That was a Torah, because again, it's a basic book. We can't get more basic than that. The second book, the Book of the Sages, refer to the major Jewish work from 2nd century BC to about 7th century, 7th, 8th century. And the idea over there is to begin to take this massive collection of books and compile them again together to a much short version. So people can read them based on a life cycle, yearly cycle, and ideas that we think are extremely important to remember, and they keep repeating in the Jewish canon and repeating themselves also in the Jewish life cycle. So, you know, you have, I give example, keeping the Sabbath is mentioned in the Torah, but also mentioned in the sages in a variety of times and places. That second book. The third book took the machshava, the thought, so to speak, deal with the Jewish traditions and text from 15th century on, which are basically the Musa movement, which was basically self-reflection, almost like the Puritan church writings of the, again, I know it's not the same century, but 15th, 16th century was very popular, of self-reflection and atonement and good and bad. That is one way of thought. Then is the Hasidic masterpiece, which is all about the Hasidic masters who came in the 17th century, who brought a new illumination to Judaism based on the individual ability to reach God on an individual level without the necessity of reading everything and knowing everything and being as devout as the most holy of people. So that was the and the third part is some glimpses on Jewish mysticism, the way it's depicted in the Kabbalah and the Zohar. Again, it's just a glimpse. It's not going to make you crazy. It's just to make it some show you, you know, the way the thinking, the way it works. That is the third book. The fourth book is dealing with Jewish law. Normally the corpus of Jewish law is tremendous. It's like any other. Like any other law offices, you know, if you go into any of the major law offices worldwide, you will realize that, you know, that they are so tremendous, they're so big, so it's too much information. The problem with the Jewish law is also supposed to be very practical, because you're supposed to conduct your life with this law. So we took all the Jewish law that we can get our hands on, and we assemble a group team of rabbinical councils that can actually compile all of it to one book. And it actually is the largest book in this collection because, again, it's a lot of information, very practical, and teaches you almost everything you need to do about Jewish life from the moment you are born to the moment you move on. You know, it's all there. And the big deal is we try to keep the line, ask your local rabbi, to minimum. Again, we do, sometimes we don't have a choice, but the idea that if somebody reads any of these books, you will get a more than a sensible sense on what it is, what is Judaism about. And we hope that people who read this book will take the next step forward and buy more books and all be interested more. And I repeat it, our agenda is not to make people more religious or less religious, independent regardless of what religion is. Just give them the keys, spoons in a lot of ways, to move forward, to open their eyes to the vast, vast knowledge of Judaism.
Now, I saw that there is actually a fifth volume already published separately, and that goes well with this series. It's on the Talmud, right?
So the fifth book, actually, it's a reprint. It's a reissue of an old book we have called The Reference Guide of the Talmud, which really does the same thing for the Talmud itself, as it was our main book, main enterprise. We added to it, but it's really just a remake of it. It will look exactly the same, part of the same series. But because we thought it was the same topic, so we should combine them as a package, as a, something that, you know, people can see that there is a progress. But it's the same idea. It is coming and give you the premises of what is the Talmud. Over there, it's a bit more detailed. So why it was created, how it was created, what's the basic language, what's the basic commentary, what is the regular flow of the text, and so on and so forth.
Rabbi Meni, I'm so grateful that you spent this time with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You had mentioned publishing maybe 80 more books in the future. Can you remind us what publications are on the immediate horizon?
Right. So immediately on the horizon, I said, is the new volume of the Tanya, as I mentioned, the first principal book of Lubavitch, of Chabad, will be available hopefully in the next 2 months. That's again, it's in English. It's a commentary on the two volumes. The one deal with the spiritual essence of the world. Why every action is important, why we think that there's a divine providence, that God basically take care of everything we do. Sorry, but today we don't need it. Today we have Google for that. Obviously, if you're missing, you know, Google watching everything you do, right? Big brother. So God is the biggest brother of them all. But again, the book is talking about that. Again, it's very spiritual, based on Jewish mysticism. And so that's going to come up, hopefully, in 2.5 months, be available in the market. And as I mentioned, the big, big deal is our app. The Steinsaltz daily study is, I think, is a must-have, of course, in every household. As you know, something to learn every day, something to see, something to be peculiar. Come with the pictures, the colors, the everything you want. It have not bad of a gamification, and you know that's the big deal for next 6 months. Then we have a whole bunch.
Friends, you've been listening to New Books in Jewish Studies, a channel of the New Books Network. Until next time, goodbye.